Hello and welcome to the Legal Mind podcast. I'm Gemma Matthews. Today I'm joined by Christy Coleman, lawyer and nutritional consultant, to talk about the role nutrition plays in our mental health. Hi Christy, thank you for joining me. Can you tell me a little bit about your background? Because I know you're a lawyer, but you're also a nutritional consultant. So talk about how all that happened.
I came about law a bit of an unconventional route. So I was a paralegal and then did my training contract on the job and trained at a city law firm specialising in IP, and really got interested in the food law side of things, especially when the food information regulations coming out back in 2015, and became fascinated with the power of nutrition and how that could influence how people were feeling. And it got me to assess my own life a little bit as well. And then went on to work in-house at an advertising agency, which was amazing, and at a department store. So again, working very closely with the food side of things and food advertising, and decided to follow my dreams and kind of retrain as a nutritionist, started off seeing one-to-one clients, and then got into the workplace wellness sector and working with smaller businesses, larger businesses, looking at how they can achieve compliance with nutrition claims, health claims on their packaging, as well as looking at how could you make that product better? And then with the workplace wellness side, just educating employers and employees on how best to look after their well-being, based on my own experience, having worked in a very demanding legal role, which is excellent, but at the same time brought about its health challenges, especially when it came to nutrition.
And a lot of us will know about the effects good nutrition has on our physical well-being, but what's the link between nutrition and our mental health?
Yes, we often see mental health as something that just happens in our mind, not something that we can have an impact by what we put in our mouths. So take, for example, caffeine. If you are more prone to anxiety, or you're going through maybe a particularly stressful time in your life, and you're maybe you've got a really big case on at the moment, chugging away at the caffeine is going to increase your anxiety levels. The same for kind of when you're having very, very sugary foods. If you're constantly going for that kind of very fast releasing carbohydrates, so your kind of white breads, white starches, cakes, biscuits, and even alcohol comes into the same bracket as that, you're going to get that quick hit of energy, which in some circumstances we need. I'm not saying cake or chocolate is bad for you, but when you're relying on that as your source of fuel, you're going to be affecting your mental health as well, because you're going to be having energy peaks and troughs, and that can affect your mood. If you've ever heard of the expression hangry, you know, when you've had maybe a chocolate bar at like 11 o'clock in the morning, an hour later, you're like, oh, I'm really hungry. I really need to eat something. That's when your energy levels, your sugar levels in your blood drop quite dramatically. And that has a huge impact on our mental health too. And even hydration, just a 2-3% drop in hydration status can affect your performance, how well, how sharp your mind is focusing. So all of those things have a huge impact on your brain and your mental health. And if you're doing that day in, day out, and it's very easy for weeks to run away, especially if you're working on a big project or something like that, all of a sudden you can kind of surface the air. You'd be like, I've been doing this for about 3 weeks now. That can take its toll, and it can affect your sleep. And when things start affecting your sleep, your mental health suffers as well, and vice versa.
And can you tell us about the link between the gut and the brain? Are those two organs linked, and how does that work?
So it's actually called the gut-brain axis, and they're connected physically by something called the vagus nerve, and that connects the bottom of our brains to the rest of our digestive system, and then chemically by chemical messages that go back and forth from our brain to our guts and vice versa. So if you've ever felt nervous about something, you've got that kind of butterfly feeling in your stomach, that's your brain sending signals down to your gut. And the same, if you've got something that's not going on right with your gut, so it might be you've got a bit of inflammation down there, maybe you've got a bit of an imbalance in the bacteria that are going on, or you've had a bit of a tummy bug, that can cause inflammation in the brain. Those signals can travel up to your brain and can affect your mood, and the two are intrinsically linked. We know that they talk back and forth all day long, and there's a huge amount of research going on to look at the bacteria that are living in your gut and how they impact your mental health, especially when it comes to things called neurotransmitters, which essentially are chemical messengers that tell your brain how to feel. So dopamine being one, which is your kind of motivating neurotransmitter. The bacteria in your gut have the ability to stop you absorbing as much dopamine. And then serotonin, which is our happy neurotransmitter and what we need to kind of feel, you know, just nice and well and content. 90% of that is actually found in your gut. So huge, huge connection there. One in four people actually suffer with IBS. I know that from my own personal experience, I had gut issues when I was practicing. And looking back now, it was, I think, because of the sheer stress. So the connection there can actually cause distension in the gut, and it can affect the way the bacteria are behaving and how many you've got down there too.
Wow. So talking about when you were practicing, what are some of the common bad habits you spotted in the legal profession around nutrition?
The worst one was the acceptability of eating at your desk, having probably breakfast, lunch, going up to the canteen for dinner and eating every meal at your desk, not getting outside, not getting daylight, that not being accepted thing to do. So if you're busy, it wouldn't be seen as increasing your productivity if you went outside to go and get some lunch and get some fresh air and stretch your legs. Mm-hmm. You're always expected to be at your desk, kind of, you know, chowing down on your food, and that's not helpful for when we're looking at digestion and maximizing the amount of nutrients we can absorb. And then next would be, you know, often if you were junior, you'd be in an internal office, you wouldn't necessarily have access to daylight, which sounds a bit bizarre, but that's the way it sometimes happens. So in the winter months, you might be inside all day long and not see daylight because your office isn't next to a window facing outside. And then next is the lack of exercise. You're at your desk all day. You don't have the opportunity to go and exercise outdoors or in a gym at lunchtime. And you're probably too tired or working too late to be able to do that in the evening. So that was also quite a challenge. And then relying on stimulants like caffeine to get you through the day, or get you through the night rather. So I remember working kind of very, very late into the early hours of the morning, and caffeine would be just the thing you went and did. And then the social side of things. So, you know, at the end of a hard day, at the end of a hard week, you'd go out drinking, and there was quite a drinking culture. Mm-hmm. And that's hard as well when you're working those demanding hours and you need to focus. So then the caffeine comes in the next day, maybe the less healthier foods. So it's trying to strike that balance, but they're definitely the key areas, I think, that lawyers struggle with when they're working in the office.
Mm. And what about now, so many are working from home? Do you think that's solved a lot of the problems, or are there new problems coming in surrounding nutrition when you're working at home?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of problems now people are working from home. Either people are finding they're grazing constantly, so they're eating because they're stressed and they've got the availability there, just going to the fridge, going to the cupboard, picking at what's there. Or they're not eating enough. They're kind of very, very conscious they need to be working, and they haven't even taken time to get outside and stretch their legs in the morning or see natural light, and they're just straight on at their desks and not taking that time for themselves. So it's very hard when your kitchen table often becomes your desk, and being able to distinguish between the two and sitting, you know, I'm guilty of this as well, sitting down, having my lunch, checking my emails. That's not helpful. You need to be able to break away from that. And so working at home has its challenges too. And not having the time or feeling that you don't have the time to be able to prepare something that's nutritious for your lunch or for your snack or even for your dinner if you're working late. So it's kind of that, what can I grab quickly, trying to avoid kids, family members or housemates, and maybe not making smarter choices when it comes to food. And, you know, normally when you go to work, you go outside, you travel to work, you leave your house. Now people, you know, a lot of people I've been speaking to haven't even left the house, where they just get up, have breakfast at the desk, and that's them for the day.
I guess as well that when you're working in an office, a lot of people would be buying lunch out, which might cause its own problems. But if you're making the right choices, you know, you could go and get a salad or a soup or something at lunchtime. And I suppose when you're at home, the temptation is just to eat a piece of toast or something that's easy rather than spend the time making a proper meal.
Yeah, exactly. Or people not knowing what would be easy for them to make. So just not kind of thinking about it and thinking, OK, well, I'll just grab this and that'll be fine. Mm. There are some easy things that you can do, like, you know, just having like pre-cooked chicken or pre-cooked salmon, or you're making most of like pulses and tins and just adding them to ready-made soups that can make them a little bit more nutritious and help you going for the rest of the afternoon, rather than going, oh, it's 2 o'clock, I need a coffee, or it's 4 o'clock, I think I need a chocolate bar. So trying to manage your energy levels by having a decent meal at lunch and stopping to eat as well is really important.
What happens to our brain if we don't eat well or often enough? I mean, as lawyers, the brain is your greatest asset. So you need to fuel the brain as well as the body, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a really interesting point, because your brain runs off glucose, glucose is essentially sugar that we get from carbohydrates. And we want a slow, steady stream of sugar into the blood that will last us throughout the morning, throughout the afternoon. And by doing that, we need to look at whole grains, vegetables, healthy fats like olive oil, avocados, nuts, seeds, and a bit of protein. Now, if we just have something that is just purely fast-releasing carbohydrates, like some white toast with some jam, that sugar gets released really, really quickly. That's great. Your brain can take it. But then what happens when that runs out? Your energy levels will dip and you'll need something else to pick you up again. So you need to fuel your brain. So don't restrict carbohydrates is what I would say. And if you are having carbohydrates, make sure you're choosing the ones that are slower releasing. So that's kind of your brown versions over your whites, making sure you've got plenty of vegetables and with fiber. Having healthy fats can also help slow down that release of carbohydrates into the blood to give your brain a steady stream of energy. Also like omega-3 fatty acids are crucial for brain health, and they come from oily fish, so salmon, mackerel, anchovies, sardine and herring. And if you don't eat fish, then maybe look at other alternatives, walnuts, linseeds. But if you are vegan or vegetarian, you might want to look at a supplement for that. But that's really, really important for brain health. So thinking about what you can put in your lunches. So, you know, smoked salmon, so easy just to buy a packet of it or cook a big fillet of it, and it works out cheaper if you buy it in bulk. And then have, you know, three portions over the course of the week for lunch. Just, you know, really easy. Chuck it on some rice and add some vegetables to it. And it's a really nutritious way to fuel your brain. And hydration is the other point that's really important for brain health.
So what are your top tips working at home or working in an office to make sure you're getting enough food, getting the right food and drinking enough during the day? Are there small tweaks you can make to make sure that you eat what you should be eating?
Yeah, I would always say plan. So people who plan their meals in advance, and I'm not saying you have to follow it to the letter, but just taking half an hour on a Sunday to be able to write down what you think you might be having, making sure you've got the food in. And there's research to show that people who planned their meals and wrote shopping lists were more likely to eat healthier and more portions of vegetables. So that's a good thing, right? So thinking about what you're going to have for the week, being prepared is just as important as having that intention to eat well. So you need to make sure that you've done your shop, that you've got the food in that you know is easy to cook and easy to make. So making it easy for yourself, like those microwave rice packets are fantastic. You know, adding some nuts and seeds to salads and soups and stir fries can automatically boost the nutrient content of your meal and your fiber content, which is really important for your gut as well. And then thinking about, are you mindlessly snacking? The biggest question I've had in the workplace wellness talks we've been doing is, are you mindlessly snacking? Are you keep going to the fridge, you keep going to the cupboard because you're maybe bored or you're finding maybe a task difficult to manage? Are you relying on caffeine? And if those things you think are potentially prompting you to go and eat something rather than being hungry, maybe take a step back, have some water. So drinking more, you know, I just fill up a bottle and just say, right, I have to finish this by the end of the day. And I'm terrible when it's cold at drinking water, really, really bad. So I have lots of herbal teas. Mm-hmm. I'm like, right, okay, I've got three herbal teas out. I'll make sure I have at least three herbal teas. And then I've got my bottle. So that's really important. But with snacking, if you think snacking is a problem, what can be really helpful is the night before, just create a little snack box. And this works really well for kids as well. So you go, right, okay, it's my day tomorrow. I know I've got back-to-back meetings, but I've chopped up some veg sticks. I've got some hummus in there. You might have some oat cakes or an apple and some nuts. And you go, right, that is my snack box. Once that snack box is gone, it's gone. But I know that I've got something pre-prepared in the fridge, so you don't even have to think about it. But you can go and get in between, you know, Zoom calls. Like some days I know, like you'll be back to back on Zoom calls and there'll be, you know, 5 minutes you can go and grab something to eat. It's a lot easier to get something that's pre-prepared than having to think about, oh gosh, what am I going to have? So that can be really helpful as well. And just being mindful about what you're eating. And then the last tip I would say is take time to come away from your desk and to eat, because when we eat our food, you could be eating the most nutritious meal, and if you're not digesting and absorbing it properly, you're not going to get the benefit of the nutrients. So when we're stressed, our body produces a hormone called cortisol, and cortisol's role is to help us fight, flight, or freeze from a potential threat. So if that threat is your inbox, which mine often is, your brain is going to be getting the sugar out of your blood into your muscles, It's going to cut off your memory center because that's not important. And it slows down digestion because digestion is not important when you are running away from a threat. So taking that time to de-stress and to rest and digest, so to get into that slower mode, which we have two modes that can switch on and off, even just some deep breathing or breaking your day up by just going outside and going for a lap around a block and coming back and taking some deep breaths before you eat without your emails in front of you, without the worry about what your afternoon has got in store for you, can make a really big difference to how you eat and how well you absorb your food. So being in that rest and digest mode. So it's not just what you eat, it's how you eat that's just as important.
That's so interesting because I don't think a lot of people would know that. I think it's, oh, well, I've eaten something, as opposed to it's the way you eat it or how you eat it can have an effect as well.
Yeah, so if you're not chewing properly, you haven't got enough digestive juices, that can cause bloating later on. Mm-hmm. So often, and this is something I used to struggle with when I was practicing, I just get ridiculously bloated. And I think that was just because I wasn't focusing on what I was eating. I was eating what I would consider like, you know, healthy food, looking at my work. So your brain isn't actually producing enough of what it needs to break down that food properly. So more work for the microbes that live in your gut. And when they ferment, they produce gas, and that can cause its own problems too. So yeah, taking time to eat properly and not just shoveling it down.
And what about vitamins and supplements? That area can be very confusing. I wonder sometimes whether people are taking too many and different ones are kind of cancelling each other out. What's your advice on vitamins and supplements?
So I really like this question because so many people think they need a vitamin or a supplement to make them a better, a healthier person. It's not true. We should be able to get most of what we need from food, but everyone at the moment needs to be taking vitamin D. Vitamin D is actually a hormone, not a vitamin. And it is responsible for so many different functions in the body. So you need 10,000 micrograms. So you'll be able to get that from any chemist. You don't need to buy an expensive brand. As long as it's vitamin D, D3, everyone needs to be taking it. First of all, because we aren't able to get enough sunlight from about October to March in this country. And then also because we've been inside an awful lot more. So we haven't been able to get the vitamin D. So your body makes vitamin D from exposure to the sun, if the sun is in the right amount of rays, and we can't get that at the moment. So we need to all be supplementing for it. So that's responsible for calcium, how well your body controls calcium, hormone levels, metabolism, mental health, so many other areas vitamin D is crucial for, and your immune system. Making sure you take vitamin D is a must. As for everything else, you should be able to get everything else from food. Unless you're vegetarian or vegan, you might want to look at supplementing with omega-3. And if you're vegan, B12 is a must because it's very difficult to get that from food alone. Maybe looking at iodine as well and making sure that you're getting enough protein from different sources if you're vegetarian or vegan can be helpful too. So no, you don't need to supplement unless it's vitamin D. And then it's looking at, have you actually got a deficiency? If you've got a deficiency, supplementation can help. If you don't have a deficiency, then there's not much evidence to show that it can contribute to making it kind of healthier, if you like. But getting a range of different colours of fruits and vegetables is one of the most important things you can do. And it's often cheaper than the supplements. So, yeah.
Okay. And do you think it's difficult for people these days to make good choices around nutrition? Because there's so much information out there, isn't there? And, you know, carbs are bad and eat less meat, go non-dairy. Do you think people are confused as to what a good diet actually looks like now?
Yeah, there's an awful lot of confusion, you know, clean eating movement. And the truth is that food can provide some sort of nourishment, whether that's, you know, satisfaction from eating it, like going out and eating a pizza when we can, or eating it in your house, you know, that provides enjoyment. That enjoyment of food is as important. I mean, I'm not saying have pizza every day, but don't feel guilty about having foods that you enjoy. Unless you're celiac disease, there's no reason why people should avoid gluten. Looking at better quality types of gluten, so kind of, you know, spending a little bit of money on something that might be better made without the emulsifiers and preservatives on it. So, you know, if your bread's got a shelf life of 3 months, maybe look for one that's a bit fresher, because they can wreak havoc on our guts. And then looking at kind of, you know, fizzy drinks as well, like, you know, we should really try and avoid fizzy drinks. And I know that, you know, they're easy, they're convenient, they contain caffeine, they pick us up, but long term, they're not probably the best option for us. So going back to basics and focusing on, you know, whole foods, can you eat more plants, really? That's what we know is crucial for health. You know, red meat, no, it's not bad for you, but could you maybe not have it every day? Could you swap it out for fish? Could you add in a portion of oily fish to support mental health and try and aim for 3 portions of oily fish a week? If you're vegetarian or vegan, looking at what other protein sources you're getting, don't just rely on tofu, you know, mix it up. Variety is so important. And that's something I think we often lose sight of. We're constantly like restricting and taking foods out. We really need to be focusing on what we can put in from the plant world. So we know we need to be eating more plants, basically. We don't eat enough. But we have got so confused, you know, with carbs being bad. No, carbs aren't bad. Your brain needs carbohydrates. Your body needs carbohydrates. Your immune system absolutely needs carbohydrates. If you're trying to build muscle, you know, the irony is people focus on protein, but actually you need carbohydrates to help you do that too. And it's just looking at what type, how you do it, you know, when you're eating, and everyone's different as well. And when it comes to dairy, yes, some people are dairy intolerant, but a lot of people aren't. So knowing what works for you, and, you know, if you think that maybe lactose is an issue in dairy, look at things like kefir, which is fermented. So it's about 99% lactose free. Does that have the same impact on you? You know, you're getting the benefits of the calcium and the protein and other nutrients in there. So trying not to restrict and going back to basics and getting variety is more important than kind of focusing on a particular diet.
So where can people find you, Christy, if they want more information or support with nutrition?
So you can find me on my Instagram, which is at Christy Coleman Nutrition, or you can find me just Christy Coleman on LinkedIn.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much for that. I think that's been really helpful, and lots to think about there. If you need emotional support, remember you can contact LawCare on 0800 279 6888 or visit our website lawcare.org.uk. Thank you for listening, and please remember to rate, review and subscribe.